Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim.
Hi, everyone. Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Glad you could join us again for our podcast, Motivated to Lead. This week, we're going to continue our conversation with Janine Sheehan, who is the Chief Administrative Officer and HR Officer for InfuSystem. We're going to be talking about the war for talent, how to get better at making hiring decisions, and how to retain employees. Looking forward to our conversation with Janine. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts around the war for talent and how do companies deal with that?
It's a big problem. And there's a few reasons why it is. So it's certainly the employment rate. We talked the other day that it's at a record low, but also for an extraordinary period of time. So that's your first hurdle. But the other hurdle that I think is worth discussion is the population. So now we have a highly driven millennial population where loyalty means something very different than what it looked like even 10 years ago. And that's going to continue to shift. And so what I mean by that is that your employee could be as engaged as possible, and you still are lucky if you get 3 to 5 years out of them. And so that's your challenge, is it doesn't matter how engaged you keep your workforce. I mean, it matters. But when it comes to this topic, the clock is ticking the minute they start. And so you have that, you have the unemployment rate being at an all-time low. You've got a population that turns much more frequently, and they're curious, so they're constantly on the move. And so as far as how you compete against the war for talent, to me, it feels like it's all about your employee brand, right? So if you think about a company that invests a ton of money into marketing, and the best companies do, your employee brand is your internal marketing, internal to get your external people, of course. And what I mean by that is, what types of programs are you putting in place to go after that passive talent population? Because they're not applying for jobs. They're not going through Indeed. They're being plucked from organizations in most cases. So what do you use? Do you use LinkedIn? What is your strategy? How do you recruit? How do you hunt for that talent? And you know what that's like. And then once you get them, what are you doing to differentiate yourself as an employer versus another company? And once you get that person on the phone, sure, you have got a great opportunity to sell. But until you get them on the phone, you've got to make sure your LinkedIn company profile is really exciting and provocative to the extent it can be. And then once they go onto your careers page, what's there? How do you excite that candidate, just like you would a shopper going on a website? If you think through that, how many people are clicking through, and what type of caliber are you getting? And then once you get them in the door, Mark, it's really about taking that employee branding and that value prop inside and coming up with key retention levers to keep that talent as long as you can. But the war never stops. It's just really about what you can do to keep your talent as long as you can.
The retention part of it is definitely an issue. And as you mentioned, with the next generation workers, that they look at work differently, as far as it's more of a, almost like a project versus a lifetime.
That's interesting. Service.
Yeah. So, you know, how do companies engage as far as kind of, is it more that giving them a mission?
Oh, it's a great question. And I have to tell you, I haven't figured it all out. What I can tell you is the experience that I've had, again, having an extremely strong HR team and being privileged to work with really good executives, is you don't shut them out. So we're talking about millennials, right? Because that's where your highest risk is. You don't want to shut them out. I mean, one of my biggest pet peeves is when I hear executives say, well, they don't know what they're doing. They're 32. They have no experience. They just don't get it. And it's like, well, they're going to be your boss in a couple of years. So you better help them get it. But I think it's about, they want a voice. So, you know, when I really break it down and I think about how I was 10 years ago, I wanted a raise and I wanted a different position and I wanted an opportunity. I had the same thoughts they have. I just didn't have the strength or the courage, or it wasn't appropriate to voice it. But my mind didn't think any differently. So the only difference is now, other than their pace is a little bit quicker, because the opportunities, I mean, there's a million high-tech companies. Those companies didn't exist years ago.
Sure.
Is that they have more courage. They're raised by different, you know, parents. They're raised in a culture that they, whether it's social media or any other platform, they're asked constantly for their opinion. And so they don't differentiate that in the workplace. So I think it's important to leverage that. The other point that I would make is don't go too far, meaning a lot of companies are also swinging the pendulum on the other side to say the aging population still adds a ton of value. And when you think about solving complex business issues and you have a company that has the average tenure of 2 years and the average employee age of 26, and you can't figure out why you're not solving complex business issues, that could be part of your issue. And so what we tend to do is encourage companies to balance that and don't underestimate the value that someone that maybe on the other side of the spectrum could add in helping solve company issues. So the idea is to actually help bond and blend these different groups versus segment them out. And if you look at some companies today that aren't doing well, that's what they do. You've got all these gens looking at each other like the other doesn't know what's going on. And if you could get them to work better together, it would be a really good story.
That's good. What mistakes do you think a lot of hiring managers make that could be avoided? And sometimes it's a matter of, you know, whether it's the process that's involved, but the things that you've noticed as far as in your years with different companies, things that you've said could be taken care of if we put the right emphasis on the hiring process.
Oh, so the hiring process, I would say, if we're talking about recruiting, the biggest issue that candidates face today and the feedback that I've heard for years is I sat in a room and I had five different people ask me the same question. Or the questions they asked were really archaic questions about, tell me about a time when you had a challenge doing X, instead of, here's a business issue that we're facing at the company that you're considering. How would you handle it? So it's more relevant, it's more tangible, it gives both parties an ability to get to know the other person's context. So part of it is, and we rolled this out at Crimson Hexagon, I don't deserve any credit because I didn't develop it, but it was a process where we trained the interviewers, whether it was a panel, and each of them had training on how to interview, training how to not talk too much, training on how to listen, and also asking different questions so that the candidate was able to get the best experience. And then each of, say, the four or five people interviewing the candidate were able to figure out for themselves as a team, as they calibrated, did they have the right person? So that's the experience piece. The problem from a process perspective, the problem that I see hiring managers continue to make, again, goes back to the diversity and inclusion. And they've got these unintentional biases, particularly managers that are very seasoned and tenured. And I've seen it a lot in sales organizations where they just hire people that are cut from the same cloth as they are. That can add a lot of value too. Hiring a known entity can be really good, right? But you lose out on this population that could help you deliver against your goals in a better way. And then the other part of it is you tend to really let the employee down if you've hired someone and they don't live up to your expectations, and maybe your expectations are unrealistic or bias-based.
And looking at the interview process, and you've mentioned as far as some of the interview questions have been asked over and over, and most candidates have experienced those. Are there any that you feel are worth asking in an interview setting that you think get to kind of a core of who a person is?
I actually, I'm a little non-traditional. I don't believe in asking questions in interviews that are scripted. In other words, anybody, especially if they're canned questions, I'm going to come in with a canned response. So the best way, if you're a really good HR practitioner, you've got a good gut. And so just by having a conversation, now you don't want it to be unstructured completely. You don't want to just chat about how your Sunday went. But if you go in and talk about business challenges, or say to someone, you know, tell me a little bit about your experience at your last company. You know, what were some of the things that drove you crazy? What were some of the things that you feel really, really good about? Kind of like the questions you're asking me. if this was an interview, you would have a really good idea based on what I've talked about, whether or not I could do the job. And yet none of them are specifically, how would you handle this exact situation? Or it doesn't feel canned, it's conversational. I find that that is how I'm able to figure out whether someone's going to be a fit. I'm able to figure out whether they're authentic and whether or not they're just telling me what I want to hear. And because it's completely unscripted, a little structured, but unscripted, we're both very comfortable with each other because that person can be themselves. Mm-hmm. That person can just share who they are, what they're excited to do, and it goes a lot better. The worst thing you can do, and I see interviewers do it all the time, is do all the talking. I've also had that happen where the interviewer, you know, I just recently interviewed, by the way, it was about 4 months ago, and it was a CHRO job. And this is important. And I met with about 15 people, and that alone over 2 days was exhausting. So it was 2 days, 15 people. Wow. And I might've talked for about 45 minutes in total. So there's no need to go any further on what that experience was.
Sure.
But I knew that it wasn't the right job for me.
Yeah. And you know, one of the people that I've worked with for years always talks about with finalist candidates is that they always want to have them somewhere outside of the office, whether it's for a dinner or for mm-hmm. something to get people out of the setting, just because he said typically people do not let down their guard until they're outside of an interview setting. And he does that with all of his, at least one meeting that's offsite. Tell me about just how many interviews do you think to get to that final decision? You know, there's some companies that overdo it. Maybe we're out the candidates. You want to make sure that you're making the right decision. Any thoughts around that as far as from your experience?
I'd say quickly, it depends, right? I think if, you know, what you don't want to do is have one or two and put your candidate in front of a panel of 15 people, right? But on the flip side, it's like getting married after a couple of dates. It's really hard. So you want to be thorough enough. So I would say if you're going to have more of those interviews, then I agree with you. You change up the setting. You tell them not to wear a suit, especially if that's what your culture offers from a dress perspective. You welcome them in so that they understand that you're not bringing them back for the ringer. You're bringing them back so that you can both continue to learn more. So I would say if you set expectations, and they don't feel like you're using them just as you figure out other candidates, then you can have them come back four or five times. But then again, you really have to put rigor into your process, make sure they're not ever asked the same question twice. And then it's okay to do multiple interviews, in my opinion.
What advice would you give a new executive who is putting together his first executive team? Any thoughts around that? Some things to look for?
Oh, change it up. I would say make it a room of people that are really different from one another. And I have that at the current company I just joined. It's so, in my last company too, it was just so refreshing. And people would challenge the CEO, you know, straight talk with respect. I learned that at my last company and it was just so refreshing. And we were all able to get so much more done because we were able to leave our egos at the door, literally. And I would give that advice to any CEO is make sure you've got A players, never settle, and make sure you bring people on that can politely push back, to help you be a better CEO.
That's good. Any parting advice that you would, give someone as their, they're either in their early part of their career or maybe they're in their mid-career?
The advice I would give there is the learning piece that we just touched on. I can't express enough how much my brain has lit up over the last few years through my coursework, through being invited back to write and do the, I did the Ask the Expert series on the workforce analytics and executive comp, which forced me to write, and it forced me to do these videos where I had to record them five times because I kept saying, go to networking events where you have to walk around with a name tag and you have to force yourself to meet someone that you've never met before. It is the most awkward moment ever, but you walk out feeling really good about yourself. And then finally, to your point earlier, read a book, do your podcasts, keep learning, because the fact that I'm doing this right now, my CEO is in the other room. I kicked him out. And he's so supportive. And any executive selfishly will love to see their leader doing things like this. And oh, by the way, it closes with your first question, which is your pathing and how you have a seat at the table beyond just HR. This is how you do it.
Great. Well, thanks, Janine. I appreciate your thoughts. And this is really a lot of fun.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun too. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.